Okay, now we are on lesson 5. Maybe I should just repeat the announcements I made this morning, since now there are some people here who aren't here in the morning. On May 17th, that's only 3 weeks, 4 weeks from now, we have the celebration of Vaisakh. Vaisakh is the international Buddhist holiday commemorating the birth, the full enlightenment, and the parinirvana, or passing away, of Lord Buddha. So on that day, we will have some special activities beginning 9 a.m. in the morning, going for refuge ceremony, talk on the meaning of Vaisakh, the 8 precepts for those who want to take 24 hours, the 8 precepts. Then there'll be lectures, talk, lectures in the afternoon. No Pali class, I'm afraid. And a special guest speaker on Michael Rome, on Buddhism, and that's a Saturday, on Buddhism in America, its prospects and its role and its prospects. Then in June, there will be a 10-day course of Vipassana meditation in the style of Sri Goenka, 10 days of very vigorous work. This will be June 18th to 29th. There is information on the bulletin board in the front of the building, contact address, telephone number, email. And those who have not yet experienced Vipassana course in this style, I highly recommend it. But you have to be forewarned. Once you enter, on the first day, you have to make a vow, a resolution. I'm not going to get discouraged and run away after 2 or 3 days. But you have to stick out all 10 days. But you have to stay in the temple. You can go walking outside, try to get somebody to look after the bow wow. But it's very, very beneficial. And you really, with the 10 days, his instructions are very systematic. They bring you in step by step into the practice. Okay, that's the second. Then in July 18th to 25th, we have 7-day Dharma retreat here in the monastery. Again, there's an announcement in the new bulletin, Bodhi Monastery Bulletin, which you find on the website, also printed copies by the entrance. This will have a lot of meditation now in the program, and also talk, some speakers coming from Taiwan who will speak in Chinese, also speakers in English throughout the week, this time in English. And this, the rule's not so strict. You can, if you want to come just for a few days, you can. If you want to stay overnight, we'll have overnight accommodations. If you have to go home, you can go and come. But again, it will be a very valuable opportunity to get more deeply into the Dharma. I think some of you were here last year for the retreat. Okay, now we go into lesson 5. And I will first explain the grammatical points. Okay, page 67. I'll go through the vocabulary a little bit, the glossary, page 64. Now this word kubanta, actually now page 65, kubanta, which means practitioner, doer, one who practices. Just for your information, this comes from the verb karoti, to do. It's actually a kind of present participle form. Then the word garavo, which means reverence, respect, esteem, comes from the word, in Pali, it's garu, In Sanskrit, the word is guru. So you know the famous guru, what's taken to be spiritual master. The word guru originally meant heavy. And so that person who has a heavy role in one's life is one's spiritual teacher, the guru. Then the attitude of, and so the word guru comes to mean respected one. And then the noun from that, garava, garavo, means reverence, respect, esteem. Going down, the word danang means both the act of giving, and also it comes to mean gift, the object given. And the way, interesting how words sometimes change in meaning. In Sri Lanka, when people offer food to monks, that is called giving a dana. So people want to make a ceremonial food offering to monks. They say, Venerable Sir, we invite you to our house for a dana. And then the word dana gets transferred to a specific food item. The main item in a typical Sinhalese diet is the rice. So rice comes to be called dana, the rice offered to monks. Would you like some more? Even though the monk might have a plate full of vegetables, curries, but if they see that he's run low on rice, would you like some more dana, sir? And if he says yes, then they will scoop a spoon of rice. But in Pali, it doesn't yet have that meaning. Then the word devo, meaning god. Here this means a god, like one of the many gods. It's not god like the supposed creator of the universe that the Christians or Muslims or Jewish people worship. So that might be called deva also. But in Buddhism, there are many, many devas who are just beings reborn in the heavenly worlds. The word nivato, a little further down, also has a meaning, something like humility, humbleness. And going further down, the word here, porohichang, which means office of a family priest, comes from the word purohita. The word porohita, it's a Brahmin who plays the role of priest, who conducts the religious ceremonies. And it seems to, like the derivation of the word puro means in front, hita is placed. So people show special reverence to the priest, and they put him in front of the assembly to conduct the service, and so he becomes purohita. Then the abstract noun from that office of a family priest is porohichang. Then the word bahusachang, which means learning or knowledge. I think I've explained this before, but I'll do it again. It comes from bahu sutta. Bahu Sutta means literally, bahu means much, sutta means heard. So somebody who has heard many teachings. In those days, you didn't read many books because religious teachings were not written in books, but you went to teachers and listened to their instructions and guidance. And so you heard much, you became a person who has heard much. And that quality of hearing much is bahu, in Sanskrit, bahu shrutya, But in Pali it becomes Bahu Satcha. It's a short A. In Bahu Sutta. That is a short A. But you see what is done typically in Pali or Sanskrit, if you take, say, an adjective, and then to get an abstract noun from that adjective, one strengthens the first adjective so that a short A becomes a long A, an I becomes an E, a U becomes an O, A becomes long A, I becomes E, U becomes O. But for now, just learn the words. Don't worry about methods of derivation. Okay, on page 66, the word vanavanta, they give colorful. Also, it can be beautiful, especially beautiful. Then going down below, they have sangsaro. It should be sangsaro. The second A is a long A, sangsaro. Yeah. Not the life cycle in the sense of in which that expression is used in English. It comes from the verb sarati, which means to run. Sangsarati is like prolonged running, continued running, running on. So it's the running on from life to life, or the wandering on from life to life. Okay, now we go into the grammar. Okay, here they give the full declension for the first person. Okay, singular. The forms that they put in brackets are rather unusual. The typical ones are the ahang, mung, mama, and myhung, both used for genitive dative. Maybe mama is more genitive. I say mama potakang, my book. Mama pita, my father. Myhung is more for me, to me. Instrumental ablative, maya, locative, mayi. Then the plural forms, mayang is the common nominative. Amhe, the accusative. Dative genitive, amhakang is common. Amhehi, for instrumental ablative. Amhesu, locative. Similarly, the word second person also follows the same principles. Okay, then what they call the enclitic forms of the pronouns. That means it's a form that occurs only inside a sentence. A sentence will never begin with an enclitic form. We will come across examples of how they're used, and I'll point it out. Difficult to give a general rule, but just from usage you pick up how it's used. Okay, then nouns and adjectives in vant and munt. Okay, this is a quite important class of nouns and adjectives. This ending vant and munt means possessed of, possessing the quality that the first part of the word. And the rule is that vant is used when the main part of the word ends with an A, and mant is used when the main part ends with a U or an I. Okay, so they give an example. Sila. Okay, we take the example. Sila vant. Sila means virtue or morality. So we would get one who possesses virtue, a virtuous person, is silavant. And then it's declined very similarly to the present participle forms. Let's see where they have the present participle. Actually, the next page, you see the present participle. The nominative, a little different. What happens with the vant to make the nominative? You see, vant is what they call a strong form of the suffix because it has the two consonants, nt, ant. So to make the nominative, the nt drop off and the a gets elongated to make si lava, that's masculine. But in the plural, the nt are retained, so you get si lavanto, similar to the present participle, like on the next page, gacchanto. Then in the accusative, you retain the full strong form, si lavantang. Genitive, dative, what they call the indirect cases, genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, locative, usually use the weaker stem form, si lavat. Then it becomes si lavat to for genitive dative, si lavata, instrumental ablative, si lavati, locative. Those are the most common. But then, more in commentarial literature, later Pali literature, not the suttas, not so common in the suttas, you get these alternative forms, which are modeled exactly after the present participle. Si levanto, then genitive dative, si levantasa. Actually, that's not genitive, that's not present participle. But si levantasa, si levantena, si levante. Actually, they're modeled after the A stem nouns. Then for the plural, si levanta, si le, then genitive dative. For the plural, si levanta for nominative, si levante accusative, si levantanang genitive dative, si levantehi instrumental ablative, si levantesu for locative. Then they explain just below the neuter forms. But neuter forms seem not so common, not very common. Because usually these vant and munt words relate to persons. Then the feminine, explained in 2.3, you add the I, the long I. I think it's generally to the weaker stem, to the vat or mut stem. And so you would have typically si levati, I think, would be more common than si levanti. And then these are declined just like the regular feminine nouns and long with ending in a long I, which you find on page, the declension, page 6. The example of nadi for river. So let's say a virtuous woman would be silavati, nominative, then accusative silavating, then genitive dative instrumental ablative would be silavatia, locative silavatia, or si levatiyang, vocative, si levati, then nominative, accusative, plural, si levatiyo, then genitive dative, si levatinang, instrumental ablative, si levatihi, locative, si levatisu. Okay, then we come to the present participle case. Okay, they just give a model for the what they call the paradigm for the declension of the present participle ending in ant. You just have to learn this and get familiar with it, or at least be able to recognize when you come across them. Then the word arahant, it comes from the verb arahati, which means to be worthy, to deserve. Originally it was the present participle, but it takes on the meaning of worthy one, one who is deserves offerings and veneration. The nominative singular of this, araha, and it's declined just like the noun with vant. Araha, arahantang, arahato, arahata, arahati, then plural, arahanto, or arahanta, arahante, genitive dative, arahatang, instrumental ablative, arahantehi, locative, arahantesu. Okay, now we have section 5 is the past participle. I think we've already had a few past participles in an earlier lesson. Did we have any past participle yet? They introduced forms. Okay, the typical ending to make the past participle is the TA, which is generally added to the root of the verb. But sometimes, as I point out, an I is added before the TA. Okay, so you take the verb sunoti or sunati, which means to hear. The root is su. To get the past participle, you get suta, which means heard. To become, to exist, the root is bu, giving the verb bhavati. To form the past participle, you add the ta directly to the root to get bhuta, which means that which has come into being, that which exists, what is real. Then gacchati, the root is gum. So here the past participle is a little irregular. You just add the TA to the G, so you get gutta, gone. For example, you have the word Tathagata, the name for the Buddha, which means one who is gone thus. Rulai, or another word, name for the Buddha, Sugata, the one who is gone well. And then, yeah, it's translated thus come. Yeah, Rulai, yeah. Oh, it's translated, right, thus come. Yeah. Yeah, actually you see, Tathagata could be taken either way. Tata plus Gata, one who is gone thus. Or tata plus agata, one who is come thus. So the commentaries give explanations based on both derivations. So in the compound tathagata, it's not really possible to distinguish what was the original sense. Maybe both were originally intended. So that it was, perhaps from the very beginning, it involved a deliberate ambiguity. Okay, the case of labhati, it's somewhat irregular because when the lub gets added, when TA gets added to the BH, it undergoes some kind of change of consonants, so it becomes ludda, means gained, gotten. Say this is etang dhanang suladang. This money has been well earned, well acquired. Suladang. Okay, then another very common past participle is ditta, which means seen. It comes from the root dis. It doesn't really come from the verb pasati. Pasati means to see. But there were originally in Pali, Sanskrit, two verbs meaning to see. And pasati went out in the present case, in the present tense. So we say, ahang pasami, I see. So pasati, he sees. But the other verbal root, dis, went out for the past participle. So that led to ditang and the future. Disati, we'll see. So they give some more examples. But then, as they point out, 5.12, some past participles are formed by adding the suffix na. For example, to give, deity. It's rather irregular. You get the past participle dinna. You could say tang danang maya bhagavato dinang, this gift. It's etang danang, idang danang, this gift, maya, by me, bhagavato, to the Lord, to the Buddha, dinang, was given. Then from the verb upajati, you get a past participle, upannang, upanna. Say yang rupang upanang tang rupang anichang. Whatever form has arisen will pass away or is impermanent. Yang kinchi rupang upanang bhutang kattang sankatang sabantang rupang anichang dukkang viparinama dhammang. What is it? Too long. Yang kinchi, whatever, rupang, form, upanang, arisen, bhutang, come into being. Upanang, bhutang, kattang, made. Sankatang, conditioned, made by conditions. Tang rupang, that form, is anichang, impermanent. Dukkang, bound up with suffering. Viparinama dhammang, subject to change. Okay, chindati, to cut, forms the past participle chinnang. I said they're fairly common, the NA forms of past, not as common as the TA forms. Basically, you just have to learn them the way you learn adjectives. Then they give explanations of the use of the past participle, but we will come across them in the reading, then I'll point them out and explain how they're used. Yo, let's see, okay, point six, yo hi kochi. Okay, yo is the relative pronoun. He is just emphatic. Kochi means like whoever. So the sense is whoever. Yo hi kochi. Yang kinchi is more common. The he is just emphatic. Yo kochi. Again, I'll point these out when we come across them in the readings. Now, paragraph 7, this is one type of standard statement that one finds in Pali. where the Buddha makes pronouncements about what is possible, what is not possible. And the word here to indicate possibility is tanang. Tanang has many meanings. Place, position, case, situation, but also possibility. And then its opposite, atanang, is impossibility. And the form tanang is often used together with the near synonym avakaso. So you say, there exists this tanang, this avakaso. That means this is possible. There is an opportunity for this, or space for this. Then the opposite, this is atanang, unavakaso. This is impossible. There is no opportunity for this, no space for this. Again, we'll come across some examples in the reading. Okay, then the prefix sa in front of a noun means, usually it means along with, together with, accompanied by, like the example I give, sa kinchino. Kinchino means some possession, worldly possession, or worldly attachment. So if a person is described as sa kinchino, you say this is a person with attachment. Whereas somebody without attachment, without any worldly possessions, is called akinchino. Akinchino is a word of very high praise in Buddhism. When somebody who doesn't have any fixed residence, no objects to look over, somebody who can just wander about freely like the wind, is said to be akinchino. Remember, there was a German monk in Sri Lanka who never stayed. He never had any permanent monastery or residence, and he would walk all over Sri Lanka many times. He would only stay in a fixed residence during the rainy season for a few months. Then he would set out wandering again. And one time he was staying in this monastery in Colombo. First, he had needed some medical treatment, so he was there for a few weeks. Then he decided to leave, and he was walking out, and then there was some layman met him coming from the opposite direction. And he asked him, "Venerable sir, where are you going?" And he said, "I haven't gotten to the corner yet. When I get to the corner, I'll decide." So he could go south, to the south of the island, or to the north of the island, to the east or to the west. But when he gets to the corner, he'll make that decision. Okay, the rest of points 9 and 10, they're just obvious from reading them. Again, we'll come across examples in the reading. Any questions on this? For personal pronouns, let's see. For first person, no. Second person, no. Third person, of course, there is. So, the masculine, he is so. Feminine, sa. Aso, also he. Asa, she. Then the ayang forms. I think we've had them earlier. Yeah, page 50, there are some differences in masculine and feminine. For the indirect, for the direct cases, nominative and accusative, they're the same. Ayang and imang. But for genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, differences. Okay, shall we go into the exercises or the reading selections? Okay, that takes us page 63. Okay, John, everybody have it? Ready to start? Janaya nuko bo Gotama asapuriso asapurisang asapuriso ayang bhavanti. Okay, this is a question. Now you notice the verb comes first, janaya. That sort of stresses that it's a question, highlights the interrogative nature of the sentence. But the subject of the sentence is what? What is the sentence, the subject? Again? Asapuriso. And the object of the sentence is what? Right. The subject is in the nominative. The object is the accusative. So he's asking whether the bad man, that's asapuriso, can know about the bad, about another bad man. And to again to highlight the questioning nature, the word, this little particle nu. So nu has, it indicates a questioning, uncertainty. And the ko, it's just emphatic. It doesn't, you can't really translate it. Then the bo, here, this, it's something like sir. In English we say sir, John. The nominative form is bhavang. It's bo is a special vocative. It comes from the verb bhavati, which means to exist, but it's used. Bhavang means, like when you say ayang bhavang, something like this gentleman, this person. Yeah. This is a masculine form. It seems to be almost like a present participle, but it doesn't have a participle function. It's just like indicates a person. No. It seems to be present participle nominative, like gacchang. Gacchang means going, nominative. Look at page 70, the declension of gut of present participle for gacchati. Gacchang. You see, gacchanto, gacchang. So you would have bhavanto, bhavang, what is becoming, what is existing. But it's not used in the present participle sense. It just is used idiomatically to mean a person, individual. The Brahman, and it was used especially by the Brahmins. And so the Brahmins would generally refer to the Buddha as bhavang Gotama. Sir Gotama, the Honorable Gotama. Like the British in the Parliament, they refer to the Honorable Member of Parliament, so and so. In the vocative form, bo. So here you would translate something like good Gotama or Sir Gotama, Master Gotama. So he's asking, Sir Gotama, could a bad person know about another bad person, asapuriso ayang bhavang? This person, this individual, is a bad person. And here the word Asapurisa. Let's take Sapurisa. It's a very important word. It comes from Sat. Sat means existing. Sometimes it means existing, sometimes it means good. It originally meant existing, but then it takes on the additional meaning of good or true. And so asapurisa is the opposite. A sapurisa is a good person, a virtuous, noble-minded person. And the opposite, asapurisa, it's a vile person, an evil person, bad person. Then the Buddha replies, atanang. Is this clear this much? Any question? Okay. The Buddha replies, atanang ko etang brahmana anavakaso. Okay, here's that fixed form that we've had. And here, to give special emphasis, normally, in normal word order, you would say etang atanang, etang anavakaso, or aso anavakaso. But here, to give special emphasis, the word atanang comes first. Impossible is this, O Brahman. Anavakaso, there's no opportunity, or maybe a little freely, it's inconceivable. And what is inconceivable? Young. Young means, again, it refers to the case. Asapuriso, asapurisang janeya, asapuriso ayang bhavang. That a bad person might know a bad person, thus this person, this individual, is a bad person. Okay, then the Brahman asks a further question. So he says, Janaya Pana Bo Gotama. And you see the Pana here, again, it's untranslatable, but it has, you call it a connecting function. It means that this sentence, it's part of like a sequence of, in this case, of questioning. Or we might translate it loosely as but. So he says, but, Sir Gotama, could a bad person know with regard to a good person, this gentleman is a good person? And then the Buddha answers, now using the more normal word order, etam pi ko brahmana atanang anavakaso. Here the pi means two. So this too, O Brahman, is an impossibility, something with no opportunity, or something inconceivable. For there is no, this too, Brahman, is impossible. There's no opportunity, no chance, you could say no chance, that here young, asapuriso, sapurisang janeya, sapuriso ayang bhavang, that a bad person might know a good person, thus, this individual is a good person. Okay, then the questioning continues. The Brahman now takes another track. It actually follows the same line. Somebody want to translate this one? It's just a matter of exchanging the nouns. You rung? You look like you're ready to give it a try. Yeah, right. Then the answer?
It appears a possibility.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No?
Not appears, but exists. Okay, maybe I should take this since we haven't had vijati before. Okay, tanankoetang brahmana vijati. And that here, this possibility exists. That a good person might know a good person, thus this individual is a good person. The word vijati means to exist. Well, yeah, it means simply to exist. Oh, that's all somewhat misleading. Appears, I see in the glossary in the back, appears, seems. No, not so satisfactory. Vijati is literally to be found, so exists. This case exists, or this possibility exists, that a good person might know of a good person. This individual is a good person. Then the questioning goes on. Janeya pana bo Gotama. Sapuriso asapurisang, asapuriso ayang bhavanti. Somebody want to try this? Reverend Anthony?
Sir Gotama?
Yeah.
Could a good person know about another bad person?
About a bad person, yeah.
About a bad person?
Yeah.
Thus, this person is a bad person?
Right. And try the answer. Etang piko.
This is it is possible.
Yeah.
That old Brahman.
Yeah.
That a good person knows a bad person.
Here, janeya is the optative. Could know.
Could know.
Yeah, or might know.
Might know a bad person.
Okay, it's a good person knowing a bad person.
Right.
Okay. Any question about these sentences?
I have a question about the use of relative pronouns.
Yeah.
In
yeah. Yeah.
We must find, I would assume it goes with Etang.
Right.
Although this is a reverse order that we normally see.
Yeah. Normally the relative comes first, followed by the demonstrative.
Right.
But here, because the statement is making a categorical pronouncement first,
right.
Then it introduces the situation to which that pronouncement refers. So this is impossible. This is an inconceivability. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So my question is, so the two, the Etang and Yang, should be
mentioned. Yeah.
So they have both of them. Otherwise, the Yang, what does Yang refer to? Yang to either Asaturi?
No. First, they're both neuter.
Neuter makes sense, because then they're nominative.
Yeah.
I have to go with the
No.
And if Yang is
it doesn't refer to one single individual. It refers to the whole situation.
And that makes it neuter.
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah, yeah. So both Eitung and Yang, they're neuter because they're not referring to one particular thing, but the whole situation. Actually, you could see the whole situation is covered by the word Tanung, the case or possibility, which is either a Tanung, the impossibility, or
it's the neuter
form. Yeah, yeah.
So the A Tanung and
Tanung. Yeah. Yeah, anavakaso is a masculine because just that noun avakaso is a masculine noun.
Right.
So it's a little bit, but the one which sort of takes on the more dominant role is atanang, which is neuter.
That made it very difficult.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out which one where.
Yeah.
Unless I really already knew the meaning.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to get used to the ways.
We're getting used.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, now we come to some verses. These come from the Sutta Nipata. Okay, yo hi kochi manusesu gaurakang upajivati evang vaseta janahi kasako so na brahmano. Okay, this is on the Buddha is now explaining to some Brahmin youngster the meaning of a true Brahmin. So yo hi kochi, this means whoever, manuseso, among human beings, gaurakang upajivati. Upajivati means to make a living, to live upon. And gaurakang means literally the protection of cows, of cattle. Go is cows, rakka is protection. But this means bringing up cattle, raising cattle. Then evang vaseta janahi. Vaseta is the name of the Brahmin youth that the Buddha is speaking to. And janahi, do you know what form that is? It's imperative. Imperative, second person, singular. So know him thus, O vaseta. Kasako. Kasako is a farmer. So is he. So know him thus. He is a farmer, not a Brahmin. The next. You see, upajivati is used together with the accusative case. You might say, whoever lives. It's hard to make up a sentence in English without using a preposition. Whoever lives off cattle rearing, whoever lives on cattle rearing. The next sentence for variation has jivati. Upajivati is just a prefix form. Jivati is basically the same meaning, but jivati goes with instrumental, to live by something. So yo hi kochi manusesu putu sipena jivati, whoever lives, whoever amongst human beings lives by various crafts. Sipa is a craft, a kind of manual skill. Evang vaseta janahi sipiko so na brahmano. Know thus, Vaseta, he, that's the so, a craftsman is he, not a Brahmin. Yo hi kochi manusesu voharang upajivati, evaṁ vaseta janāhi vāni joso na brahmano. Whoever lives off vohara means trade or business, know that he is a vanijo, a merchant, not a Brahmin. The next, yohi kochi manusesu parape sena jivati, whoever lives by, say, carrying message, delivering messages for others, know that he is a messenger, not a Brahmin. The next one, yohi kochi manusesu adinang upajivati, whoever lives off, literally, what is not given. Here, adinang is a past participle, but it refers to the noun, what is not given. And so what, and the implication is one who lives by taking what is not given. In other words, one who lives by stealing. What do you call this person? Choro eso no brahmano. He is a bandit or a thief, not a Brahmin. Yohi kochi manusesu isatang upajivati. I think isatang is archery. Yeah, archery. That is shooting arrows in war. Yoda jivo no brahmano. Yoda is war or battle. Ajiva is livelihood. So he is a professional soldier, a warrior. Yo hi kochi manuseso poro hichena jivati. Whoever lives by performing the priestly service, know that he is a yajiko. He's a yajika means a priest who performs the sacrifice.
So what is a Brahman?
You see what the Buddha is going to do here. He's, I don't know if it continues to the end of this. We'll come to the meaning. The meaning will come. The way the Buddha is reinterpreting, re-explaining the word Brahman. Traditionally, it would be the Brahman. In Indian society, it would be the Brahmin who performs this function of conducting the sacrifice. But the Buddha takes the Brahmin in the sense of the holy person, the person who is the representative of Brahma, the divinity or the divine power in the universe. And the Buddha will explain Brahmin in his own understanding. Okay, yohi kochi manusesu gamang ratancha bunjati evang vaseta janahi raja eso na brahmano. Here bunjati is literally, it means to eat. So whoever eats gama, the village, and ratta is the country or kingdom. So whoever eats up the village and the kingdom by taxing people, collecting revenue from them, demanding that they produce things for the support of the royalty. He is a raja, a king. Kind of cynical statement of what a king does. You might say more freely, whoever exploits the villages and the kingdom, he is a king. Not a Brahmin.
What do they change from so to
S? Basically from meter. Because you need another syllable. Okay, so now the Buddha says, na chahang brahmanang brumi yonijang mati sambhavang. Okay, what is chahang? Cha plus ahang. The cha is just, it means and. Here it just fills the meter. But I do not, okay, and brumi means to say, to call. So I do not call one a Brahmin who is Yonijung, born from the womb, Mati Sambhavang, originating from the mother. In other words, here the Buddha is challenging the Brahmins, their conception of a Brahmin. The Brahmins believe the Brahmin is somebody who was born from a pure Brahmin father and mother. So according to birth from the womb, one becomes a Brahmin. If the parents are Brahmins, then the child is a Brahmin. Then the Buddha says, Bhavadi nama so hoti, sarve hoti sakinchino. Okay, he is called a Bhavadi, which means one who goes around saying bo, bo, bo. Was the kind of address that the Brahmins used amongst each other. They would always refer to each other as bo this, bo that, sir this, sir that. So he's not really a Brahmin, but he's just a bow-sayer. And the reason, sarve hoti sakinchino, you could say this is the condition, as long as he has attachment, if he has attachment, possessiveness, then he's just a bow-sayer. Then the Buddha continues, he says, Akinchanang anadanang tam ahang brumi brahmanang. The one without possessions, unadanang. Here, adanang comes from the words dana. Dana means giving. Adana is the opposite of that, taking. Then unadanang means one without taking. So one who is without possessions, without taking or without grasping, he is the one that I call a Brahmin. Yeah.
You mentioned about the
Dhamma,
right?
Yeah.
And
Adhanang.
I mean, not
Dhamma,
it's taking.
No. Adhanang, beginning with the long A.
How about the
N-A? A-N. The prefix un is negation.
Okay, thank you.
So, it un negates Adhanang,
okay.
Taking. And this is, remember I spoke about the Bahu, what do you call this? Bahu Bihi compound. Anadana means literally not taking, but here it means the person who has no taking, the person who is taking nothing. So the person without possessions, without taking up, without grasping. Him I call a Brahmana. Then Sabha Sangyojanam Chetva Yove na Paritasati Sangati Gang vi Sangyutang Tamahang Brumi Brahmanang. Chetva, what form is this? I heard it. Speak loudly. Speak up. Gerund, right. And here the meaning is, yeah, it actually comes from the verb chindati, which means to cut. Does the book explain that? Yeah, it's the gerund of chindati, meaning to cut. So chetva is having cut off all sanyojanas. Sanyojana is the fetter. We speak about the 10 fetters that keep people bound to samsara. And so, having cut off all the fetters, yo vena paritasati. Yeah, very powerful words in Pali. Paritasati means something like to be agitated by either fear or craving. It has both nuances. This is because, I give a little explanation. This is sort of there's an interesting sidelight, the way words, which in Sanskrit are quite different, in Pali, a colloquial language, their meaning flows together. See, paritasati is actually in Sanskrit. Paritrishyate, which is related to Krishna, which in Pali is tanha, craving. So paritrishyate in Sanskrit clearly means to crave, to thirst. And the opposite, na paritrishyate, would be one who does not thirst or crave. But there's another word, it's the same in both Pali and Sanskrit, tasati, which means to fear, to be afraid. And so then paritasati in Pali, it comes originally from this, but it's also used in a way which picks up, and also from tasati you could get an augmented form, paritasati, to be completely afraid. And so paritasati picks up also the meaning of this word. So it means to be troubled both by craving, because of the original derivation, and by fear, because of that secondary derivation. So having cut off all fetters, one indeed is no longer agitated by craving or fear. And here the yo, it's nominative. But now in the next line, sangatikang visangyutang, still the same subject, now becomes, turns into accusative. Why does it become accusative? Why does the subject yo ve na paritasati? See, that's nominative, the subject. Now we have sangatikang visangyutang, but it's the same person. Why? No, it's the same person, but why does the nominative become accusative? Okay, I'll tell you. Because in the fourth line, tam ahang brumi. See, the Buddha is saying, I speak of him. But that I speak of him, it's referring even back to the third line. So, I speak of him, sangatikang. Here, sangha, this is not sangha in the sense of the third refuge. So I like the spelling in this one. It means like a bond, something that ties one. Plus ati ga. Ga comes from the root gum, to go. Ati is beyond. So Atiga is one who is gone beyond, or we can say overcome. And what has been overcome are the sanghas, the bonds. So one who has gone beyond, or one who has overcome the bonds, and visangyutam. Here, first, yutam in Sanskrit. Yuktam means yoked together, joined together. Actually, sang just has that meaning. Connected, joined together, attached. Then the V here means non-attached. It means V has a sense of removed attachment. So one who has reached detachment. So having cut off all the fetters, one who is not agitated or troubled, I call this one who has overcome all, who has overcome the bonds, who is detached. Him I call a Brahmana. Okay, any questions about this?
The word Sava Sanyos Janam is singular, in singular form. But we have Sava. I thought we have all single better.
I think you have to understand that this is the verse, you have to fit the meter. So it's a way of speaking all the fetters together, and it's a totality. Let's say he was cut off. Yeah, just take all the fetters together as one totality.
I just want to know if Saba actually doesn't really mean the all in the obvious sense. Does it really mean the multiple?
It can mean that, but it can also mean everything together as one collective whole. Usually it refers to plurality. But sometimes we have the all in the sense of everything together as one whole. Yeah.
When you first learned Pali, do you actually learn the derivations from Sanskrit to Pali? Because you are explaining that to us. But I was wondering when you started, did you learn that also?
I don't think I learned all of them when I was studying Pali. But then as I went along, then I saw how words were derived. Sometimes found it in the dictionary.
So basically, by introducing this, it will actually facilitate us in the future if we want to learn.
I wasn't pushing you in that direction, but just it indicates, in this case, I wanted to indicate this rather interesting way in which that one word in Pali picks up the meanings of two words, two ideas that are distinct in the Sanskrit. Any further questions? And next week I won't be able to be here, but I don't want you to interrupt the Pali. What I would think to do, maybe if I made a tape explaining sections 3 and 4 here, would you come? Because I don't want it to be interrupted for 2 weeks again, because last week I had to be away. No, I won't be able to come next week. But I will make a tape explaining the verses in 3 and 4 so that you come, get the explanations, then the following week, because I'm afraid if you don't do the Pali for 2 weeks, then it starts getting rusty.
What if we promise you?
Excuse me?
Essentially, when you're explaining, you actually write on the board.
Yeah.
Just the explanation, like recording without being able to take the words apart, then it's kind of...
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm sure everyone is doing it. Just a few.
A few of you.
Left.
I know.
So your long list of people to pick through the translation has shortened.
Yeah, what happened to Georgette? She was...
She had some guests. Yeah, she had
guests
in the house.
Oh. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so I'm sorry that I won't be here. I won't make the tape, but do it so that the following week I can go quickly through 3 and 4. Then we try. Then the following week we'll take the further reading. From your point of view.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to catch.
Okay, then take that time that you need. Take the time.
There's a lot of things to catch.
Yeah. Okay, review. It's always good to review. And also I have to say, they don't worry about trying to memorize all the vocabulary lists. Just look through and become familiar. Because they give there's too many words to try to memorize. But you all, as you go through reading exercises, then you'll see which words repeat, which words only come very rare, occasionally. Okay, that will be it.